it's like deja vu.
How do you mean? This has never happened before.
Of course not. This was not a rehearsed intro. We're back, baby.
Yes, yes. How have you been?
Oh, I've been... Well...
I say that like we haven't spoken recently.
I know. We've had several conversations just to fill the gentle listener in. We've had several conversations since our last episode, but probably if you'd recorded them, I feel like people would
we wouldn't be able to release
out. Yeah, I feel like people would have reached out and been like, are you okay? Do you need help? I've got the name of a really good therapist, which I, to be honest, wouldn't have been opposed to. So, but yeah, things have been wild, man, like seriously wild. Yeah, we can get into all of that. But how are you?
I'm good. I'm not in need of a shrink. Just yet.
Perfect. Jealous.
Not that I'm aware of, anyway. Other people would probably disagree. I'm good. I feel good. I was going to say I feel fresh. I don't think that's right.
I feel like feeling fresh in December is kind of
except
like
you're just being cold.
Physically fresh is one thing, but anyone that says they're mentally fresh in December, you're either a sociopath. Or you've been in a coma for 11 months. feeling fresh, ready to go. It's like, no. This is the month where we decline into pure, sedentary, chocolate feasting goodness, you know?
I'm going to go with coma then.
Yeah. So that's what you've been doing the last 11 months then, Dan, yeah?
Yeah, I've just been in the coma.
Couldn't bear to live a life where we weren't recording this podcast.
Absolutely. So what's the point? So I put myself in a ice chamber, thawed myself out.
You know what? I so respect that. And the fact that you built the technology especially that would know, it could sense.
Mm-hmm.
It is time.
Yeah.
It is time.
I'm ahead of the game.
How Walt Disney of you. Was it enough that he did that? Or did he actually do that? Themselves.
I don't think he actually did that. I'd like to think he did.
I feel like that was something that I really genuinely believe.
I'd like to think he's still around, like just throws him somewhere and then like a few years like from now he's just gonna just pop out and go, only joking.
Yeah, but what
wasn't really dead.
That would be so what's in the fridge? You mate, you're in the fridge. That would be such an interesting, I mean, this is a whole tangent that we must stop ourselves from going down, but let's just entertain it just a little bit.
We started off with a tangent. It's like old times.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. It would be really interesting because hasn't there been like loads of stuff that's come out in recent history that basically he was like a massive racist? So even though he created like one of the most beloved companies in the world, actually, if the man himself came back to life, it would be like, ooh, that's not okay in 2019. I mean, it was never okay. Which is
I'm not sure I believe that. Because like his name's Walt.
I mean,
like, that's a name that you trust.
I mean, if Breaking Bad taught us anything, though.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. That's poked a huge hole in my theory there.
The only Walt that I know, besides Disney. How many Walts do you know, Dan?
But Walter White wasn't racist,
though. That's true.
Though.
He was just a...
I mean, his name was a little bit, but...
Was it? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I see what you did there. Very good.
Although I don't know, it's been a while since I watched it.
Yeah, he wasn't racist. Was he? He was just an arsehole, really, wasn't he? In the end, he was just a bit mean.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one who knocked.
I mean, he say his name, damn it, say his goddamn name.
How did we get here?
It started off well, and then it descended into what would happen if Walt Disney unfroze himself.
Anyway,
back to my mental breakdown then.
So let's talk about your mental breakdown. Yeah, that's what everyone wants to hear about.
I was saying to Dan before we started recording, like, oh yeah, what What should we talk about then? Like, what was the last thing that we talked about? What was the last episode that we did? Was it the one where I was having a complete existential meltdown? And he was like, yeah, that was the one. I was like, oh, good. Lots to fill people in on then. So I feel like existentialism is one of those things where once you've seen the golden goose, you can't unsee it, you know? Like, you know, when you like you see the world for what it is, you kind of can't unsee that. So I'm still definitely in that zone of like, what does anything mean? What does art mean? What does it mean to be creating and be a part of this movement, creating this technology at this time when things seem exciting but also quite scary, and all these like ethical issues around like data and privacy and, you know, what it means to like create this medium where essentially you know, like a Facebook is going to own the data of exactly what you kind of dream of doing, essentially, I guess, is the way that I imagine VR to go eventually. Mm. And that's quite an interesting thing to grapple with. But in terms of like in general life and stuff, I'm doing great. I just got back from Brazil. That was very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, this year has been absolute chaos, really. It was supposed to be a year of, I think I started off the year saying to myself that this year is going to be about passion projects and, you know, staying consistent. And naturally that went out the window by March. And and I don't know, I put something up on Instagram either earlier today or yesterday, which basically says, I kind of like was like posing the question to people, is it better to stay consistent, like stick to one thing, even if you're getting all these amazing and kind of crazy opportunities come your way? Is it better to go, actually, no, I said this year was going to be about this and that's what it's going to be about, and close those kind of doors of opportunity? And this year, obviously, I've done the opposite of that. And what that's meant is I've had extreme high periods of, you know, like we kind of previewed Playing God at Cannes and like then premiered at Raindance, and like so we've had like loads of cool like success with that project. And then obviously I did like the TED talk and that was really cool, and doing all sorts and getting flown to Brazil to like talk on behalf of the like the British government, like loads of really cool shit that wouldn't have happened if I had said no, this is the year where I'm doing this and only this. So what's your thoughts on that? Because I feel like it's a question that everyone has to grapple with, right?
Like, did you actually even consider saying no to any of those opportunities?
Well, no, obviously not.
Because, yeah, it's like that's a hell of a year. I think you've got to look at it as, like, I think you've got to look at it as what I refer to. I don't know if I've mentioned this on here before, but I like to refer to stuff as like my defometer. So basically I'll look at things that come my way on the basis of, would I regret not doing them when I'm on my deathbed? Are you still there? Hello?
Yeah, perfect.
Cool. All right. Well, hopefully that won't happen again.
And this is the universe's way of being like, don't mope.
Yeah.
Don't be ungrateful. I'm like, I'm not ungrateful. I realize this could sound ungrateful by being like, oh, maybe I should just say no to all these opportunities. That is not what I'm saying at all. I feel like it's just assessing.
This is, I think it's probably Walt Disney's ghost. Yeah.
How dare you disrespect my name.
I will come at you from beyond the grave and mess with your internet connection.
And also clear your freezer out, you dirty bastards.
Oh no, please Walt, don't. Not the internet connection. Take my eyes. Yeah. But not the internet. Yes. The connection.
Yes. Oh my god, there are so many things that I would rather lose than the internet. How sad is that?
That's crazy, isn't it?
Anyway,
where were we? So before we cut out,
you were about to give me some solid, like, professional grade therapy advice. I think you said the way I look at it is
okay. I'm glad that you've built it up in that way, because this isn't going to disappoint.
With that accent, nothing could disappoint one.
Yeah. So, okay. So for the last couple of years, probably, I think, whenever I've had an opportunity to come away, I'll look at it as what I refer to as my defometer.
Ooh.
So basically, I just think about if I'm on my deathbed, like further down the line, if it's something that I would look back on and regret. Yeah. If it's something I would look back on and regret not doing, then I'll do it. But if it's something that I'm like, I think I'd survive not doing that. I think I'd be all right.
Interesting.
Then I won't do it.
Yeah, I love that.
But all the things you've had, I would be high up on the defometer for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Well. I think the thing is it's hard to kind of, it's hard to kind of describe, because that's the thing. All of those projects that I just highlighted, they're obviously like once in a lifetime, super privileged. No one in their right mind would turn those opportunities down. So it's not necessarily those ones, because I totally agree with you. Those are the ones where it's like, you know, they're bucket list worthy in my kind of opinion. And so I'm super grateful to be able to do that kind of stuff. I think it's more a case of the other stuff. So in between,
what was the other stuff that you was planning on going to be doing this year then?
Well, so yeah, my whole focus for this year was going to try to be focused more on building like my own kind of content, my own IP. Like when I think about, you know, you kind of think about your why, or you think about what it is that you're super, super passionate about. I think in general, I find it quite difficult, because I kind of seesaw between creativity and business. Like I love the business side of things. I love marketing. I love learning about like business development and sales, and like I love that. But also I love drama and I love telling stories and I love that kind of thing. I think so for me, in my head, I'm never really fully in a project, because I'm always juggling like 40 balls at the same time. I'm never without 40 balls in my hands, Dan. I couldn't resist. Sorry. and the problem with that is that, you know, so for example, I wrote a script earlier this year, and it's been a while since I made Kida Like, and Kida Like was obviously, that was like my baby. That was like my first big VR project. And also it was mine. I funded it. I wrote it. Even though I didn't like direct the actors on the day, I essentially kind of like helped direct like the action, you know, everything about it was mine. And I've done loads of projects since where I'm kind of coming in and I'm high level producing it, or I'm acting as kind of, you know, it's kind of, I'm pulling my resources and my network to make it happen. And like Playing God, for example, like I absolutely love Ben and we work really well together, but I'm an exec producer on that project. So I wasn't that close to the creative of it. I was more kind of looking at it from a kind of logistics and a distribution kind of point of view and kind of getting it out there. So it's a little bit different, and I'm craving getting back to just working on my own stuff. But I mean, we have this conversation all the time about the fact that, you know, there's something really nice about something paying your bills and then you just get to create on the side. And my problem, it's not a problem. That's the thing. I don't want to sound ungrateful, because I realized I'm in a very, very privileged position, but my money comes from the same place as the place that I want to create passion projects. And that's really difficult, because you can't separate that out then. So, you know, making money from VR and making money from doing commercial gigs and speaking makes it so that I go through massive kind of, I'm in love with it and then I fucking hate it, you know? Like, and I think around the time we recorded the last episode, I was really like, I think I'd either just started or just come off the back of finishing like a massive commercial project, which was so much fun and it was so challenging. And it was like one of the biggest projects I'd ever been involved with. And, you know, I was completely at the helm of that ship. I was the one in charge of it and executing it. And it was phenomenal. And I got to work with actors and it was interactive. It's like all the things that I really wanted to do. But off the back of that, I was like, I don't want to see another VR headset for a month. Like, I just need to just have a break from it. And I think that is the slight,
yeah,
the double-edged sword, right? So it's kind of that whole thing of having these massive highs and massive lows, or is it better to have that steady consistency? And I was speaking, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying this, but I was having a catch-up with Ben Claremont last night, and we were chatting exactly about this, and we were just having a bit of catch-up. And the last time I saw him, we were speaking at an event together in Ireland, and he's very much, you know, he's very consistent, and he does one thing and one thing only, and that is build his own personal brand. He makes his own content. He doesn't work for anyone else. You know, he only works for himself. He builds his own shit, and he's committed to that. And, you know, he said before in videos, you know, he kind of went broke to do that. You know, he like quit his job, essentially. He got rid of all of his clients to pursue that. And that has worked so well for him. And he now lives the life that he wants to, and he loves it. And he had to make that sacrifice up front to do that. And I think the slight position that I'm in is I have so much incredible opportunity come to me that I find it really, really difficult to say no to anything. So, but in saying yes to a lot of things, what I'm actually doing is saying no to the projects that are kind of close to my heart and the things that I really want to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know what you mean. I think that's the thing I found when I first, you know, started freelancing. I thought, oh, you know, this is going to be great. I'll have more time to work on my own stuff. And then, like you say, you don't. And then by the time you do, you're like, I don't really want to pick up a camera. Yeah. Anything. I just want to have a rest from it.
Totally.
So then you never get to work on anything. And then when you do, or if you just force yourself to do it, then it's not as good, because then your heart's not really in it as much, because you're like, oh, just, I really can't bother right now.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that line, isn't there? There's that fine line between, you know, the whole like just showing up and having the discipline to do it anyway. I was reading a book about, you know, I think it was called like 7 Habits of Highly Successful People or something like that. And it's not just success in terms of like, you know, money and anything like that. It was to do with, you know, like high performing athletes, or like, you know, people that would say they're like the happiest that they've ever been. And one of those is that whole thing of like the thing that defines someone who is successful versus not is someone that shows up when it's boring and when it's hard. And that's something that I am absolutely terrible at, because when it's boring and hard, I just go and do something else. Or I just watch Netflix, you know?
But I wouldn't mind like boring and hard if it was like one of my own like passion projects.
Yeah, that's true.
That's fine. But then if it's someone else's, where you're literally just in it for the paycheck.
Yeah, definitely. So what about you? Yeah, how's like the rest of your year been? How are you finding it? Because you're like really jazzed and you're like working on some cool stuff.
So mine's been sort of kind of like the opposite, the complete polar opposite. So like one of the things that I always do, which is,
we're the yin and yang.
Yeah. Listen to us, guys. We know what we're talking about. I kind of wanted to like create more this year. That was kind of my plan. But then I don't know. I don't think burnt out is the right term. But it was kind of like similar thing. I think it was just sort of chasing sort of paying clients all the time. And yeah, I became a bit disillusioned with all that. So then I spent the past 6 months working with a friend of mine in the afternoons, just like a few hours a day. I was like doing something completely unrelated, but that, not having to then worry about like chasing clients and like things like that, somehow like just made me feel more creative, because I had more time, especially at that job, because there was hardly anything to do. So I spent a lot of time writing. Weirdly enough, so I essentially just get paid to write and have a desk.
That's the dream.
To do it at. So I've just been doing that. And then, yeah, there was one project in particular I was writing, which is one I told you about, the comedy VR series that is very closely based on stuff that's happened to me in real life.
Yep.
I'd say like over 90% of that series is true events.
Oh my god.
I think just probably
tell us some of those situations, dialogue.
I mean, that's spoilers. But essentially the the series kind of follows like being in your mid-30s and being like sort of thrust back into the dating scene when it's all like changed and, you know, none of your friends are single anymore, so you've got to can't try and like adjust to the world as it is then.
The Tinder of it all.
It's, I mean, that was the least of my worries as it panned out, but yeah, hopefully you'll all find out next year when it gets released.
Yes.
So
did you film it? Have you filmed it?
No. I've done the rough scripts for the episodes and stuff, so I'm just sort of tweaking them and fine-tuning them. It's kind of crazy how quick that was to write, actually, because it was just like it all happened yesterday.
Reliving some of the most probably traumatic moments of your life.
But it was good times. Do you know what the fun thing about it was? Because I wanted to try and sort of make each episode like set in one location, so it wasn't like always flicking from like here to there and stuff. But then there was like elements where like a conversation or something needed to be put across to the audience for something later on in the episode to make sense, but couldn't be done within that same scene, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to think of clever ways to convey that within that same scene so that it kind of made sense. None of that makes
sense.
Give
us an example, if you can, without giving too much away. I kind of get what you're getting at, but give me an example and it'll probably make more
sense. There's one episode which is basically a series of dates that were awful. So again, that one I like in particular. I think that's going to look like really good when it's done. But rather than, I didn't want to, like, again, I didn't want to go like keep changing locations for each one. And also I wanted to utilize the whole 360. So the idea is that it'll be like, you know, dinner tables or like pub tables or whatever. But each one will be lit individually. So I mean, so like first you'll be looking at in front of me, so there's like two people sitting on the table having a date and chatting and stuff, and then when that finishes, then you'll hear conversation
know.
Like to the right of you, and then you turn around to the right, and then it's like
in the same thing,
but yeah, and it's a new date, and then it'll follow around, but
yeah,
as that happens, then each one will like the rest will go into like darkness. Or like slightly darker,
like
so that'll be highlighted
visually. That would work really well.
So I look quite cool. So I was doing that, and then also had like this other side little horror projects which I mentioned to you earlier when we were chatting. Which is probably the one that will probably happen first, purely because of the funding. It's probably going to be easier to get for that.
I mean, that was something that I wanted to save conversation wise for the podcast is it's so interesting, isn't it? Because luckily, like, you are a fan of horror anyway, so it's a genre you're interested in. It's a genre and it's a genre that you're well versed in, you know it, and it's actually something that you would quite want to do. But what I find interesting about that is the fact that obviously it's easy to get funding for that kind of thing, and naturally it's going to be easier to showcase that kind of thing, right? Because that's the kind of content that works like in this very early day of VR. But where do you, I don't know, how do you feel and where do you sit on that whole like leaning into trends and kind of, you know, I mean, because, you know, I mean, I'll reserve my thoughts, but yeah, what's your thought on that?
I don't know. I mean, it's a common knowledge that the horror genre is probably the most profitable, not just in VR, but just in film anyway, because they tend to be cheaper to make. And also you don't need to have stars attached to them.
Yeah.
to make the money back. Like, you know, you got your Paranormal Activities, which I personally don't think is that good a film. I don't think it's that effective.
Controversial.
As a horror movie. Yeah.
But they made like millions, didn't they? But, like hundreds of millions.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, as well, the reason I got into all this, not VR, but just like filmmaking in general, was because of the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, okay.
That was the film that did it for me, because it wasn't just the film. I mean, the film just terrifies the hell out of me. I'm very much a less is more kind of person. Yeah. I don't need the jump scares and stuff. I need someone with their face in the camera just snotting everywhere. That's
the most iconic like bit of Blair Witch Project. Yeah,
that's all I need. But yeah, no, for me it's imagery that freaks me out more than anything. And just that bit at the end when they walk down into the thing and he's standing there in the corner, just facing the corner, that stayed with me for weeks. But it wasn't just that. I just loved that these guys created this whole mythology around it. And at the time, and it'd be difficult to pull off that kind of thing now, but at the time, you know, it was very early days of the internet. So everyone thought it was real for like quite a long time. Like no one knew it was just a film. They thought it was legitimately some footage that was found of like made by some kids that had gone missing and just been edited together.
That's so interesting.
And I was fascinated by that. I just found that incredible. Just that these two guys and, you know, small budget, you know, in regular movie terms, could just create this just massive worldwide phenomenon. And it was like a similar thing with Paranormal Activity, I guess, but just not as effective for me anyway. I can't remember where I was going with this. But yeah.
Trends.
So I get that it's probably easier to make your money back with horror, but for me that isn't the reason to get into it. I think it's just because I'm a fan, and it's for me it's something that I would enjoy working on, have enjoyed working on, like what would freak me out essentially. And also I think it'd just be fun to watch people watch it and just watch their reactions to it, because that would be the gift that keeps on giving.
You evil bastard. I love it.
No, but it would though, because you'll be there and you couldn't really tell like what part they're on, but if you're seeing them just jumping and screaming, you're like, okay, right, I know I've done my job here.
Yeah,
it's kind of like if you was to make a comedy and you was watching it with an audience and seeing people laugh, you're like, okay,
I've done my job.
Definitely. But the cool thing about the one I'm working on is that I made a point of, because it's a series, I didn't want every episode to feel the same and then get a bit boring and monotonous. So every are you still there? Hi.
Oh, yeah, mine's recording.
Okay. Right, let's see if we can get through this now with no internet issues. It's really annoying because it's not like I've got like slow Wi-Fi.
I don't think I have particularly slow Wi-Fi, but you know, I like to blame my router for everything. So it's either the podcasting gods are wreaking havoc on us, or
Walt Disney.
Or Walt Disney's ghost, or my little shitty PlusNet router. I mean, it's one or the other, clearly. Anyway, you were saying horror series. Right. You've chosen to do it as a series. Carry on.
Yes. So to make it a bit more fun and not, you know, repetitive or monotonous, each episode will be based on a different subgenre of horror. So one episode will kind of be more psychological horror, whereas another episode could be more like a paranormal horror, and so on and so on.
And like jump scare, gore type horror, that kind of stuff.
See, the thing is, the jump scare stuff is kind of difficult to do because you kind of need a person to be looking in that direction for that to really pull that off. So
that's
it needs to be
VR directing comes in.
Well, yeah,
I believe in you. Yeah. You can do it.
But if the person's that scared, they're going to close their eyes.
Mm.
So it's
that's true.
It's difficult. Whereas if you've got something that's a bit slower. So like, for example, that we're going to go back to one of our old conversations about my love of Japanese horror.
Oh, yes. I remember it well. I think that was the frog porn episode, wasn't it?
I think it probably was. Because that's a natural segue. So
Japanese horror, yeah.
The paranormal horror-y episode will be very much influenced by J-horror. And theirs is very, there's no real like jump scares or anything like that. It's very slow burn, and it's just sort of stuff in the corner of a room or something, and then slowly just like coming out of the corner and just sort of slowly walking towards like the main character and stuff like that. And it's just the imagery, which that's why I love it. It just creeps the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that that stays with me. I don't want things running at me. That won't bother me.
Yeah.
But if it's walking towards me slowly, there's that creeping dread that comes with that.
Like when you see a spider in the corner of the room and you're like, if it starts crawling towards
you. Oh, no, I've already left the room.
I'm down the street screaming like...
Doesn't even need to be moving. I'm gone. I'm out of it. That's why I've never been to Australia.
Really?
Can't do it. Couldn't do it. Just from that alone.
That is so interesting. That was one of my biggest fears when I lived out there. And I only saw one spider, but I did cry when I saw it because it was big and it was like colourful. And like, you know, when you're just like, oh, no, everything is wrong. Hmm. Gross. But apparently a friend of mine who I was out there with said that at some point we were within the vicinity of one of those giant cane spiders, you know, like the famous massive ones. And she was like, and I didn't say anything because I knew that you would have wanted to like get on the first flight home, so you never noticed it. And she only told me like when I kind of like got back to England, and I was like, good, because I would have not left my bedroom if you'd told me that.
that whole country is my horror movie.
There you go. That's
like that would terrify
you. Film your
me.
Whole thing on location in Australia.
Yeah, but for everyone else, that's a comedy. That's so true. For me, that's horror.
A new genre. That's a blending of a new genre, right?
What would you call it?
I don't know. The horror
comedy.
Yeah, it's kind of like a horror reverse comedy. It's like, you know what I mean?
Like a horror travel series.
Oh, now that's a good shout. That's a cool genre. Has that been done before? That seems like that should have been done.
I think so. Travel horror.
Travel horror, combining the two most popular 360 genres. Hello, millionaire.
True.
Who are we kidding? No one's been a millionaire.
That's not a bad idea. Then you're going like checking out like a temple somewhere, and then a ghost comes along.
Yeah.
And then it's all creepy and stuff. But then the ghost starts telling you about the temple and who built it and like, all these details. And they're like, oh, thank you, ghost.
Thank you so much, ghost. Thank you, my friend.
Wow, plot twist. I really wasn't expecting this. I thought you were going to kill me.
The plot twist is that they're a connoisseur of historic information.
Yeah. It turns out it's just someone that works there, but they're just really pale.
That would be really good, actually. I'd be kind of into that. I'd be into that genre. I mean, I don't really do horror, but I'd be into that.
I'll pitch it. I'll pitch it to Veer.
Literally, you say to them, right, it's travel, but it's horror. They'll pee their pants. They'll be like, oh my God, that is exactly what we want. And we didn't know we wanted
They'll
it.
They'll just be like, cha-ching.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to sell amazingly in our arcades.
Hmm.
Well,
but yeah, but to get back to your original point, yeah, it would just be making it for the love of it, because I never really thought that I had like a favorite genre as such, because I just kind of love everything and kind of wanted to give everything a go. But I think horror sort of tends to be the one I always kind of fall back on, I guess. So I guess that probably is my my favorite genre, that and comedy.
Yeah. You see, I love that. And I think that's amazing that you can kind of pull on that to, you know what I mean? Like it's beautiful when that aligns, and the thing that you just happen to love doing is also something that actually there's a need for it and there's a want for it. Mm. And therefore it makes life a bit easier. I feel like the thing that I come up against is my favorite genres are either character-led sci-fi or just pure, a bit like, I know we've talked about this before, and you like kind of that mumblecore character, like not really doing anything type genre. And the problem is sci-fi, way, way too expensive at the moment in VR. Like Playing God is a sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fairly well executed considering the budget that we made it on, but it's not, you know, like one of my favorite series of all time is like Orphan Black, and it's not like majorly like special effects-y or like, you know, super futuristic or worldly, but there's definitely like a lot of elements to it and a lot of kind of, you know, a lot of visual effects budget basically that you would need, I think, to pull it off properly. And then character-driven drama, as we've seen, really, I mean, I still love Kida Like, and I love what it's about, and I love the drama, like, with the characters, but it just doesn't work in VR at the moment. People don't want it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a little heartbreaking, because that's the stuff that I want to make. I don't really want to make the big artsy, installation-y type stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Unless it's character-driven, and it's about a story.
But then not all sci-fi has to be all like effects driven and stuff like that. There are smaller films out there that are considered sci-fi. Have you ever seen like and it's got the girl that is in the OA, can't think of her name.
I've watched a bit of the OA, but
that's a weird show.
Yeah, I kind of watched an episode or two and I was like, this is awesome, but I'm not in the right headspace to really get into it. So
it gets super weird at the end. Oh. The first series anyway. Another Earth, that's what it's called. Another Earth. So it's basically she plays, if I'm trying to think of it, she plays this girl who's won a trip. So basically it's in this world that where they find out there's another Earth, weirdly enough. Yeah, it's not just a clever title. There is actually another Earth within the film.
Yeah, it's actually the plot summary. It's the title and the tagline.
So that, I think they find out that on this other Earth, there's like other versions of the people from our Earth. And she plays this person who, I think if memory serves, she wins a trip to go to this other Earth. But then she befriends this guy who's, I think he was in like a car accident that was his fault, and he killed the other person that was involved. And then, yeah, they kind of strike up this friendship, and then she sort of debates whether to give him her, you know, free trip to this other Earth to kind of start fresh. But then it turns out they have some sort of connection.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Not like a romantic connection, but again, that's because there's a second Earth in it that makes it a sci-fi. But technically it's not. It's really more of a drama.
See, I think that then that again, regardless of whether it's technically sci-fi or not, that's quite, by the sounds of it, quite fiction, dialogue, character-driven stuff. And I feel like, I don't know about you, and I could be, I don't know, I feel like the general consensus is that it's not that it doesn't work necessarily, it's that people aren't interested in it in VR.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not the priority of all the big kind of distributors. It's not they definitely don't want it in like VR arcades. They want kind of like spectacle content where people can, you know, go out and have like a real experience. And, you know, whether that be like a fright or action or, you know, spectacle kind of, you know, impossible, dreamlike, crazy, trippy space missions, like all sorts of like cool stuff like that, which I totally get. And I see that, but at the same time, that for me is where, I mean, I don't know, the script that I wrote earlier this year that we've just secured funding for and will be going into production in the new year on it, that is kind of like a cross between, it's like a dystopian kind of drama. And And so I'm excited to have another crack at it, because the funding is from the BFI, so it's their prerogative. Is they want narrative, they want character driven, they want, you know, fiction, like they want to explore that. But the kind of the consensus within that organization, and this is completely anecdotal, and it's not, you know, it's not something that I've like heard from any particular one, but the general sense that I get is that the reason that they're not quite investing in it, you know, as much as let's say Arts Council is because they don't really know it, they don't really get it, they don't really know what it adds. And I think that's the thing for me when I think about, I always bring it back to that analogy of being a kid and running around the house and pretending to be in stories and like daydreaming, and like that is essentially what I want VR to be. But how you recreate that, I mean, that's probably something that we'll look back on in 5 years and be like, well, yeah, obviously we were feeling that way because we were literally discovering the medium for the first time. But that for me is still where there's like a kind of disconnect, is I haven't seen anything which is purely character driven drama that makes me really go, wow, yes, this absolutely had to have been done in VR, and I prefer it was done this way rather than a flat kind of film.
Yeah, I get that.
I don't know, how about you? Have you seen anything where you go, yeah, like this is...
I'm just trying to think now, because obviously like I watch a fair amount for my VR reviews. Available on YouTube now.
Go watch them. They're brilliant. You might see him with his trousers around his ankles or hiding under a bed sheet.
I'm way past that now. Way past that. Wait. Fully clothed from now on.
Because of all of the reports. Yeah.
The people spoke. No more partial nudity.
Might have been an Instagram poll. It might have got heated.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like what stood out really. There's one I watched recently called Your Spiritual Temple Sucks.
Oh yeah, I've heard of this one,
which I really enjoyed. But I think again that there was I don't know, a spectacle is probably a bit much, but I think the use of like 8-bit graphics within the film just got me really excited. From like just remembering playing, you know, old Mega Drive games and stuff as a kid, and those sorts of graphics, and then just being in this space where those graphics were like above my head, like I was in a game or something. Just
oh, see, that's really cool. Is that a drama?
I guess it is. I guess in a way, or like a comedy drama. You're basically the main character, and it's based on a Chinese thing where if you clear out your spiritual temple, it improves your life, and then you're given like a spiritual god type thing. But in this one, it's like it's crap. It's just this fat guy dressed as Pikachu. Although they don't mention Pikachu. And he's just really unenthusiastic about it all. And he's brilliant. He's like really, and he doesn't have like any lines or anything like that, but it's just his visual expressions. It's just brilliant.
Oh no, we flatlined again. No! We have flatlined.
Right. My Spiritual Temple Sucks is really good. You should all go watch it.
In a nutshell.
It's
that sounds really good. I was just watching the trailer whilst we had our slight technical intermission.
Again.
Yeah, for the third time. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't want it to sound like I'm negging on VR, because I'm more passionate about it than ever. I feel like more than ever, I kind of feel like I can see the future that we're kind of we're traveling towards. And yeah, like it's going to take a long time, and that's fine. And there's lots to be done within it. But I think for me, maybe it's also about looking at, okay, well, maybe trying stuff like this in VR is kind of what's going to lead to eventually finding the thing that makes it click, you know? Like, at some point, someone made the first horror film and people were like, what the fuck is this? Like, you know?
Yeah.
And like you say, Blair Witch, like nothing had ever been done like that before. And then all of a sudden it was there and it sparked this kind of, you know, this trend. And so that's kind of exciting and frustrating all at the same time, right? It's like creating your own path within that. I think next year for me, I want to be a lot more about dedicating time to do that though, rather than, oh, there is no trodden track and it's really difficult to get funding and distribution for it. So therefore I'm just not going to make it a priority. Instead, I think it's kind of looking at it as like, no, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to commit to that regardless of whether it's hard or not, and see that through. And I'm excited. I'm excited to kind of do more of that. And I'm excited to kind of, you know, collaborate with you and like see your projects come to fruition. That's going to be really exciting. But yeah, what are some of your like 2020, apart from obviously getting all these projects off the ground, do you have any particular things that you want to focus on next year? Or
again, it's mainly those, but then I mean, like you say about, you know, where the income comes from once they've been released and stuff, but I think it's trying to sort of work out income streams that sort of bounce off of those projects and stuff. So like, I don't know, merchandise, say, or the other thing I was thinking of is that you could potentially, I mean, as well as sell it on like platforms like Veer and Amaze, if Amaze, on that sort of thing. Because I know at one point there were just like 180 videos, but they seem to have 360 stuff on there as well. So, I mean, who knows? I was thinking of like, you could even like sell it yourself for your own website, but with like other things. So you could do like a version that's also has like a commentary over it about how it was made, so you could point it out and say, oh, if you look over this side, this is, you know, blah blah blah, like so and so the sound guy was hidden,
yeah, like director's,
you know, behind that chair in the corner and stuff like that, just little insights, and also like maybe even a behind the scenes little documentary video.
I love that. That's a great idea.
And things like that. Copyrighted it though, so no one else can do that. Apart from me.
No one can do multiple revenue streams on a piece of art.
Sorry, guys.
Well, it's funny.
No, because it's...
Oh, sorry, Karen.
Sorry, go on.
There you go.
That's just the sound of silence. No, is it... I was at a screening the other night of Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Oh, I really want to see it. I've not seen it yet. I'm excited.
If you're a Kevin Smith fan, you'll love it.
And I love the first one. It's so iconic.
It's exactly what you want. But I love Kevin Smith, as I'm sure a lot of people do, have a lot of time for the guy. You know, he's so incredibly down to earth. But he was there and they had a Q&A after the screening. And, you know, he's always the first to admit that his films never really make any money. But yet he's sort of doing all right. Yeah. And you sort of think, oh, well, how are you making money? And okay, fair enough, like he directs like some TV episodes here and there, and sometimes he has writing gigs doing writing comics and things like that. But if you go on his websites, you see that he has literally all these other income streams from like selling merch off the back of these movies, because he has this little built-in fan base.
That's interesting. Yeah, so it's merchandise off the back of the IP.
So yeah, so it's not really the films that he makes that make money. It's well, all these other things that he has.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all, actually. And it's interesting that this is a conversation that is not more readily had in the film industry, I don't think, because this is a conversation I have with my friend who's a musician all the time. And we do a lot of kind of, you know, outside of my kind of VR stuff, I've kind of like, I've tried to creep my way into basically helping her set up, well, she like set up a record label, and I've kind of like coerced her into letting me like help her with it, basically. I'm like, you know how I keep doing all these videos for you? Maybe we should be partners in this business. She's like, yeah, right, whatever. And what I've kind of like come to realize is that the music industry is, it's become like really common knowledge, and it's very well known that like people don't make any money from music. nowadays, mm-hmm. you know, like ever since the days of like LimeWire and download and MP3, like that, the kind of the death of the CD was essentially the death of the middle class recording artist, right? Because all of a sudden mm-hmm. you've got, you know, you've got polar opposites. You've got super, super extremely rich, big record labels that suck up all the money because they've created, you know, like the Justin Biebers of the world and the Ariana Grandes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the absolute opposite, dirt poor indie artists that just make nothing and they just bootstrap. And there's no kind of like in between because there is no market to sell. Really, there's no market to sell mainstream CDs. So we were having this conversation and I was like, well, yeah, it kind of makes sense though, that when you break down why does like TV make money? It's because of the advertisement that is sold in between, you know, it's like, that's how TV makes money, yeah. like the adverts, like, or the Netflix, like the subscription money, that's how it, so it's always been a product. Mm-hmm. It's always been a product that is the engine behind selling things. And so it's funny because I've had like that similar thing to you of like, well, I don't know, maybe there's something in like owning a t-shirt company and then using all of my kind of creative media VR-y stuff to like essentially be a promotion for the t-shirt company, but it just so happens to be like an exploration of kind of, you know, it's kind of like doing the stuff that you really want to do, but yeah, that is just kind of the product, because you're never going to make real proper hardcore money with VR films, especially not this early on in the game. So I think there's definitely something to that, and I feel like maybe that's it, maybe it's about creating, because I was thinking recently about creating like a podcast drama series, because one of the big projects that Cats Not Peas is doing next year is a big immersive audio installation, which I know is like counter to what I just said earlier, but it is a character driven, story driven, funnily enough, existential crisis type project. And that is driven by, it's like a partnership with Bose AR, because Bose, the headphone companies, they're doing a lot with AR and stuff, and how you bring audio into the AR. And so I've been thinking a lot about that, and about the fact that actually that's really interesting to use this kind of like these different mediums to create these stories and these IPs that you then, maybe you create a graphic novel, maybe you like sell t-shirts, maybe you sell badges, like whatever it is, whatever floats your boat kind of thing. But yeah, something walks away proud to be like, yeah, I saw that, I did that.
He kind of mentioned that at the Q&A the other night, that, you know, he was the one that really created like a shared cinematic universe.
Oh, that's interesting. It's really
Because like obviously Clerks was his first movie, then it was followed by Mallrats, which obviously had Jay and Silent Bob in it.
Yeah,
so that's all part of the thing. Then I think after that was Chasing Amy, which also had Jay and Silent Bob in, Dogma.
Yeah,
all of these characters all live within the same, you know, universe, and their common thread was Jay and Silent Bob. And then when Jay and Silent Bob got their own movie, Dante from like Clerks would pop up, and other characters.
Yeah.
Would pop up from like Mallrats and whatever.
It's almost like episodic film, kind of, that are related, like anthology type stuff.
Yeah. But so he was essentially the one that kind of really started the whole cinematic universe type trend. But with all those characters, like say, he created these IPs that he could then go back to. So when he kind of got, you know, a little bit bored of playing in that sandbox, if you will, and started trying different stuff like horror, and then other really random stuff like Tusk and Yoga Hosers that just nobody was interested in, and everyone just kind of hated, even like a lot of like hardcore Smith fans. And he was like, you know what, I'm just going to go back and play with my own toys that I've created and stuff, and that people will happily go and watch again. And also with the new Jay and Silent Bob, I don't think it's having like the same sort of theatrical release like his previous films had, because he's been doing like a whole roadshow like across the States. And then he came over here, he did a screen at the BFI. He did, I think there was about three or four screenings all in all at the Prince Charles. Not I went. So I was at the first one. That started at 5 p.m. There was another one a half eight after that. I think one of the ladies who works for Legion M was there, and she said that they'll probably finish about 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
So he was there like the whole night, just doing an intro to each screening and then a Q&A afterwards.
Wow.
But he said that he will make more money out of doing that and taking the movie on the road and doing Q&As and stuff than he would like just the traditional route.
Yeah, you see, that's interesting, isn't it? And that's like an idea that, again, I've been kind of playing with, is this idea of, I was at like a seminar the other month about bringing VR to first-time audiences, and the slight problem with our industry is that the more you do VR, the less impressed you are with early VR, and you kind of like, you have to up the ante, right? So it's like you start in 360 and then you want to do like interactive VR, and then you want to do like mocap live kind of rendered VR, and then you want to do like one-on-one immersive performance VR, and then you want to do, you know, and that's it. And it makes sense because you're evolving kind of like as like an artist, and especially in like in a multidisciplinary technology like medium like VR or immersive in general, it makes sense. But the problem with that is that's not accessible, and VR will never be mainstream unless we have those big mass consumed IPs. Like, how do you get first time audiences interested in watching it? And so the consensus was, like big IPs that people already kind of know, shown in kind of, you know, the pop-up VR cinema format, or creating, you know, you go and you show a piece and then there's like a discussion around a particular topic afterwards. So for example, Playing God is, even though it's a sci-fi drama, underneath it all is kind of the philosophy around migration and refugees and that kind of thing. And so there's this conversation that we're having about distribution wise. Well, do you take it on a roadshow where you incorporate, you're not advertising it as a VR piece, you're advertising it as, you know, an evening discussing the philosophy of migration. And you're going to attract a very different crowd to if you just advertise it as, come and see a VR horror film. And so there's something really interesting about that, and it kind of makes me think about a meeting that I had probably a good couple of years ago now, and it was when I was kind of getting a little bit of traction in Leicester when I moved back to kind of like where I grew up. My name was kind of being thrown around there a little bit for what I was kind of doing in VR, and I remember I ended up sitting down with someone from the council. And they were talking about, you know, how do they support something like this, which, you know, if you think about like city councils are so far behind anyway, they can barely, you know, get on top of social media. How on earth are they meant to keep on top of all these emerging formats? And one of the things that the guy said to me, because he'd never even heard of VR, he was like, that is just like mind blowing what that is. And I didn't have a headset with me to show him. I wish I had, because obviously that's the best way to introduce someone. But he was like, he was a really old dude on the like, he was like, you know, I retired like 5 years ago and then I came back because they really needed someone. I'm going to retire again next year. So he was kind of like, you know, well into his like late 70s, I think. And he was saying that he was saying that it reminded him of the early days of cinema, in that, you know, people think the early days of cinema was like, oh yeah, you know, there was just like theaters, right? And they just kind of, that's what happened. That's why you go to a cinema and it is the way it is, because it's based on theater. But no, apparently at the time there was like a snobbery around like, oh no, you're not bringing your screen into our theatres. Like that's not happening. And so early filmmakers would have to cart around a projector, and they would like gather people in like playgrounds, and they would like gather people at like friends' houses, and they would like, you know, they would like set up this big clunky projector. And that's how the cinema movement happened. And I feel like we are so used to having that distribution so readily available, because I can take a photo right this second, put it on Instagram, and it can be seen by 1,000 people within less than like, you know, 24 hours. We're so used to having that inbuilt distribution that the idea that in order for someone to actually see your, you know, your art or your kind of whatever you want to call it, you would have to like go and take it to them and like kind of convince them to even give it a chance to watch it. That's like a really interesting notion in this day and age. And I think that's the big thing that I always joke with Ben, who is the artist that I worked with on Playing God, like, because we're working on the audio installation together, and we always joke that you can't really be a director properly in this medium, because you have to be a producer first. You have to think about distribution. You have to have those conversations about where it's going and how it's going to get there, and, you know, what the business model is. Otherwise you just can't do it. There's just no point in doing it unless you've just got money to just throw down the drain. Anyway, that was a long ramble, but
yeah. No, but that's what I was thinking when I said, like, earlier about excuse me, like, taking the, you know, when the horror series is done, just maybe like showcasing an episode at next year's Fright Fest Horror Movie Festival and stuff.
It'd be amazing.
Just to take it directly to the audience that would be interested in that sort of thing the most. And maybe even like just setting up a store at like a Comic Con.
Yeah. Oh my God, that'd be so cool.
That's huge. Essentially, that's you know, it's going to be a similar audience. Yeah. And if they like it, they'll be like, oh, maybe there's more stuff like this. And it could like make them go out and get a cheap Oculus Go or something.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing, I think we can't underestimate how powerful those first interactions are. And there has to be a good enough reason why someone would go out and, you know, want to buy this thing for themselves. And it can't just be one piece of content or Beat Saber. It can't just be one thing.
Yeah
It has to be more than that. And and that's why I think, again, it's just all like these loose ends that kind of need tying up. I think that's a really brilliant idea to kind of think about it first from like an IP perspective, and think about like, how do you bundle it together?
But then also the problem with that is that if they were then went out and bought a headset in the hope of trying out other horror VR experiences and stuff, and then they get it and then there's not many others around.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, okay, well, should I keep all this, or maybe I might just get rid of it again? So it's a difficult one. I think we've had this conversation before where there's a lot of people kind of in it to sort of be in there first for like a financial reason, but it kind of needs to be more about creating stuff that is just cool as opposed to being in it for the money.
Absolutely.
And I think that is where I'm at the moment. It's not, I mean, obviously, yeah, I think it's one of those things where, you know, if you work on it and you're passionate about it, the money will come at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't make it about that first.
I think that's it, isn't it? And it's that whole like law of attraction thing. And I'm not sure I 100% believe in the whole idea of like putting it out there and it'll come back to you. But I do think there is something.
Cheers. Thanks. Thanks for that.
No, not in the sense, you know, how like the actual law of attraction.
Supposed to be backing me up.
No, we're yin and yang.
It's
remember?
My accent, isn't it?
It is. I think I totally agree with what you're saying. What I mean is the actual law of attraction is
that's better.
you say something to the universe, you know, you say, I want to be a millionaire, or I want to create this, and I want to do this. And then supposedly just by putting it out there, the universe kind of sends it back to you. I'm not sure I believe in that, but what I do think you've hit the nail on the head with is if you follow your passion, if you do something that you're actually really enjoying and that, you know, means something to you, it won't matter if you don't make any money. Like you know, you might regret stuff that you do for the money, but you'll never regret something that you do for the love of it. And then if you get paid or you end up making money from it, then that's just like, that's amazing. And that's a win. Well,
definitely.
We've been around the houses tonight. This has been a beautiful catch-up episode.
We went deep.
We were haunted by Walt Disney's ghost. We had many technical issues, but I think we've solved VR. So that's the most important thing.
There you go, folks. We've done it.
Yeah.
Now go out there.
Go out there.
Go out there and show them your stuff.
Yeah. Go in.
No, don't. I should probably reword that.
Don't do that, especially if you are an older gentleman, because it is not a good time to be doing that. I don't know what you heard.
In terms of creating, I mean, not like, just go out there fully clothed.
Yeah. And just
create stuff.
And like, get the metaphorical wheelbarrow out and take your VR headsets around and like go and show your stuff. Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should like don't know, obviously there was the BFI.
Get a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, get an actual legit wheelbarrow. Well, I've been, obviously I did the BFI thing. I did the BFI thing last year, coming into like early this year, where we did like the 6 month pop-up VR cinema. And they are looking to like refund that, but I'm like, maybe there's something in just like just doing it ourselves, just like getting a load of mates and just going on like a road trip where we just barely cover expenses and we can afford a McDonald's, and we just like go, like a bunch of 360 creators that can do it on a weekend, like, you know, we do the whole musician gigging thing and we just like try and organize little meetups and we just showcase stuff. That would be really cool.
That's not a bad idea.
That and Rumblecore, baby.
Because if you could, oh yeah, yeah. But if you could like get, even if it's like a small venue and stuff, like I don't know, I can't remember how much you said the tickets were going for when you did the BFI stuff.
Between £5 and £10. You could charge more.
So you could potentially do that. And if you've got the creators there and stuff, then you could do like a little Q&A kind of thing where you talk about it afterwards.
Yeah,
as well.
If you did it on like a weekend where you could do like 5 showings back to back, you know, you get 20 people in the room, or like 15 or whatever. I can't do that maths, but you know, that's not bad maths. Mm. That would be enough to cover, you know, expenses, I would have thought, and maybe have a little bit of a profit share at the end.
I think there could be something in there, you know, because it's almost kind of similar to the, you know, the Kevin Smith Roadshow that was mentioned earlier. It's kind of in a similar way to that, but rather than just like one thing showing, you have a number of stuff. And that's it. So if they get like 3 experiences within that ticket price, as well as like a Q&A bit afterwards, that's pretty good value, I think.
100%.
For anyone that's interested in that.
Yeah, and I mean, because I've also thought that, because the thing is, entertainment has like a ceiling price, and then you can charge more if you're actually giving value, right? So if we turned it into maybe you do like a couple of showings that are, we turn into a VR masterclass on like how to get started, how to make your own, you know, a bit like kind of like the online courses that people like are putting out there. It's kind of that, but in real life, getting kind of that hands-on Q&A, chatting about the practical side of like making a VR film. And then you could like charge a little bit more for it because you're actually adding value, because this would be filmmakers that potentially would want to learn that. You know, maybe you could charge like £40 a head or 50, or I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's something in that.
Yeah,
if you're still listening to this and you think that that's a good idea, DM us.
If you're interested in hosting, give us a shout. Well,
yeah, and like my oh sorry.
No, go for it.
I was going to say my friend that set up the record label, she did a house tour recently where she basically took a couple of her artists on the record label, and they just basically said, right, who's got a big house who would be willing to have us and invite a load of friends over and just like, let's just have an evening of like listening to good music in someone's living room and having like, you know, beers and chats. And she said it was one of the best experiences of her whole music career. She absolutely loved it because the vibe was just so good. And, you know, maybe there's something in that. Like, maybe there's something in, like, let's do, like, a VR tour of, you know,
people's living rooms.
Yeah, like, just, like, meeting up somewhere and just, like, doing stuff like that and saying, you know.
Not only that, but I think that there'd be great word of mouth coming from that as well, because people would then go back and tell their friends about it.
Yeah, it'd become the new one.
It's not something where they just go home and then just never mention it again.
They'd be like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm scarred. Yeah.
What did you do Saturday night? I'd rather not say.
There was a man in a VR headset with his trousers by his ankles. Oh my God.
Some guy came around my house and plunged me into darkness.
He put a computer on my face. It got weird. Yeah, but essentially, like, that's kind of how Punch Drunk started, the immersive theatre company. They started off super small, super niche, super, like, you know, kind of rogue. And then now they're kind of arguably one of the most recognized, most, you know, sought after immersive theatre companies in the world. And it all started, you know, with a little idea of like, how do we do theatre differently in a little shitty location in London? So yeah, maybe there's something to that.
Definitely. Yeah, it sounds good.
Cool. Well, now that we've like set all of our intentions for 2020, we just have to hold each other accountable to it.
Well, I mean, if anyone's listening to this, they can hold us accountable as well.
Yes, please. Please do.
So,
please do.
You've had it here first, folks. 2020, we're going to be going on shitty VR tours.
Hells yes. And we'll, oh my God, right, okay.
Coming to a living room near you.
We do living room VR party, masterclass podcast recording extravaganza.
I mean, we're going to need a shorter title.
I mean,
straight off the bat, because I can't even remember what you just
we'll
said.
We'll give it the
there'd be no room for any like images and stuff on the poster for that. It's just gonna be all words.
That's great. Good. People are sick of artsy imagery. They want just Comic Sans. Tell me what it is.
We need like it's like a VR version of Woodstock.
Yeah, yes.
But just on a really small scale.
Yeah, like teeny tiny scale. But I love it.
Fruitstock.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad, but it's good.
I'm trademarking that as soon as we get off this.
Just like Rumblecore. Like, I've bought the domain. Yeah. It's happening.
I've got the domain. Have.
I'm ready. For it.
It's ready to go. And then Vrudstock will be ready tomorrow.
I love it. We're creating this little empire, but without actually acting on it. So we best like act on it.
Yeah. Got all these IPs.
Yeah,
ready to
I'll put my existential crisis to the side, and we can just.
Yeah, please. Yeah, please do. Rumblecore and Vrudstock away with you.
And on that note, I feel like. Thank you so much for if you're still listening. Thank you so much for sticking with us, and thanks Dan for like covering my absence with some brilliant little episode like pop-up episodes of
Have you been listening?
Yeah, I've listened to a few of them. Yeah,
really?
Well, I think there's only a few of them, right? I listened to the one with Dr. Frost dude.
Dr. Frost?
Was it Dr. Frost? What was that thing? It was my day. This was the right podcast, right?
For a minute there, I actually believed that you had been listening.
It's Dr. Frost, isn't it?
And then you made up a character called Dr. Frost. And then you completely lost
Which
me.
Which one is it then? What's it called?
You were so convincing up until that point. Are you talking about Defrost?
Defrost. Do you know why I got it confused? It's because isn't it based in it's based in a psychiatric hospital, isn't it? You're in like a wheelchair.
Yeah, it's kind of based in like similar to what Walt Disney is in.
Oh, yeah, like,
like a cryo chamber facility. Jeez. Or something like that. Yeah.
Dr. Frost.
There probably is a Dr. Frost that works there in the background, but he doesn't play a part in the movies.
Yeah, because I think I definitely listened to that one, but that was a while ago, right? Because I remember you talking about like the shenanigans that were going on in alt space when you had that interview. That's why I went to listen to that one, because I thought it would be funny to hear your alarm. But you kept your cool.
Yeah. I think I cut out, like, because that was, like, the highlights from that interview. I think I cut out a point as well, because he said about what camera they were originally going to use. I think that what the camera that they used to shoot the pilot, and it's been, like, discontinued since.
Oh, really?
And I made a joke. I made a joke. And I didn't even think about it at the time, but I made a joke and just said to him, I was like, oh, so you're the reason that camera died. Like that. And then realized afterwards it was just like shit. And then just quickly backtracked, like, Jesus, this is a dude that directed Grease, you dickhead. And then as I quickly backtracked, it's like I'm only joking.
Obviously. It's the accent.
just a little bit of British humour for you there.
They use the didn't they use like the back to back GoPro with the Antonia lenses or something?
I think they did in the end. I think prior to that, for the pilot, they used the Ozo.
Oh, did they?
I think so.
Yeah, that makes sense. That good joke, though. To be fair, I mean that camera did need to die. So
when you're the only British person in the room. Super awkward.
You should have just quickly recovered by like being like, loved your work in Greece. They would have been like, in Greece, the country? Like, yeah, that's why you're here, right? Dr. Frost? Yeah.
Please accept my Facebook friend request.
Oh, God, that's brilliant.
Yeah. But yeah, no. I'm glad you listened to that one.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not very consistent. I feel like I started the last one that you put out as well, because I thought that this was before we had a catch-up call, and I thought that you'd like moved on without me, and I was like, respect. I mean, essentially just jumped off a cliff the last 6 months. So I would absolutely respect that. but yeah, it wasn't. But anyway. Enough shaming of me.
No. It's just a case of just having stuff to stick out there in the absence of this.
But now we're back, and now you can give us subjects to talk about. So get in touch. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Yeah. David Yateman. I only just
shout out.
Yeah, shout out to you. But also, I've only just seen your comment on my Instagram about what we should talk about. And he said we should talk about new VR filming techniques. So maybe we should do an episode about that. What else? I specialize in creating custom Shopify stores and profit. Let me know if you're interested. Oh, okay. So that one's maybe an interesting topic to cover.
Is that from David as well?
No. No, imagine. That'd be brilliant. Oh. 360 by day. Shopify website ninja by night.
I like how the internet started working out as well when we got to the end of this episode.
Yeah, now we've done a solid 40 minutes like without interruption.
Yeah.
Cheers, Walt. He's like, yeah. Stay away from the hardcore subjects and we'll allow it.
Typical, yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been beautiful.
Until next time then.
Ciao for now. Yeah, if we don't speak to our lovely listeners before then wherever you are in the world, have a lovely Christmas, and wishing you a happy new year. But I'm hoping that we get another one done before Christmas.
Well, we kind of have to now, because David has requested a topic,
and that's true.
Who would we be to let him down? That'd be our Christmas gift to you, David.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shit, done. Pressure's on.
We'll probably end up just tangenting about Japanese horror again or something, you know?
Yeah, or Korean horror. Mix up a bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a whole tangent to be had about that, but...
Yeah. But anyway.
Okay, ciao for now.
Later.